Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with me. I'd suffer the embarrassment of gastroesophageal reflux disease if you made me choke on the idea that you missed this week's show. Peer-to-peer for 2021. David Hesekiel returns with a look at this year's P2P prospects, but not before a survey of the P2P carnage that was 2020. There are distinct opportunities for 2021, and David shares the collective advice of thought leaders and practitioners. He's the founder of Peer-to-Peer Professional Forum. On Tony's Take Two, we've calmed down. We're sponsored by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. And by Dot Drives, prospect to donor simplified. Tony.ma/dot for a free demo and a free month. Here is Peer-to-Peer for 2021. It's my pleasure to welcome back after several years, David Hesekiel. He is founder and president of Cause Marketing Forum, Inc., helping nonprofits enlist millions of people to raise billions of dollars through the Peer-to-Peer Professional Forum and partner with businesses to do well by doing good through Engage for Good. Both organizations hold national conferences to provide access to practical information and inspiration to help nonprofits forge valuable connections. You'll find them at peertopeerforum.com and at engageforgood.com. David is at Dave Cause. Welcome back to Nonprofit Radio, David.
It's great to be back, Tony.
It's a genuine pleasure. Good to have you after probably too many years. I'm sorry for that. But here we are now. So no more lamentations.
No time like the present.
To talk about peer-to-peer. First, just acquaint us with, you've got three organizations there. You got the Cause Marketing Forum, you got the Peer-to-Peer Professional Forum, and you've got Engage for Good. We know what they're doing generally, but drill down a little bit.
Sure. So
listeners understand what you're
talking about. Cause Marketing Forum is really just the holding company for these two endeavors.
Okay. A shell company. That's where your illegal tax money. Yeah. Where your illegal tax money is going.
Enough money to be dealing with the Cayman Islands and all of that.
Yes, Cayman accounts. All right.
It isn't that interesting.
Not that. Okay.
All right. Actually, originally, I started the company with a conference that was called Cause Marketing Forum, all about how businesses and nonprofits could work together. Over the years, that area of interest morphed. And so the word cause marketing became a little dated. And so we changed to Engage for Good because businesses are now looking more holistically at the whole field of how they can have values and do purpose-driven work, creating a better world while still being faithful to their bottom lines. And so that now involves not only consumer-facing programs, but programs designed to attract and retain and motivate employees, activism on the national and international scale, and a lot more. Peer-to-peer professional forum. I've been a big name changer. I started that one back in 2007 as the Run, Walk, Ride Fundraising Council, because I think that many of your listeners will be familiar with the term peer-to-peer fundraising. But way back in 2006, when I was really pondering this, that didn't exist. People never used that phrase.
We didn't say P2P, peer-to-peer. So
no.
run, walk, rides.
So I tried to come up with a title that would telegraph what we were talking about. It took a number of years, but we picked up steam when peer-to-peer became a common phrase. We rebranded, and I learned something very interesting along the way that is a lesson for us all. I learned we had a huge spike in the number of people who came to our conferences, listened to our stuff after we made that change. And I mean, it was a great rebranding, but it wasn't that great. And I was learning that certain people were being so literal that they were saying, well, if I don't have a run, a walk, or a ride, I'm not invited to the party.
Yeah, I can't do a dance.
Exactly. Right. Whereas really, what we're talking about is this amazing engine of fundraising and community development in which a nonprofit has its supporters get involved in some activity and then reach out to their networks to get support, as opposed to the traditional form in which most fundraising takes place, where the nonprofit directly makes an ask in many different ways, individual giving, legacy giving, all sorts of different campaigns. Here, they're using that power of that network to get money from people who they probably would never have talked to because they weren't particularly interested, but those relationships create a lot of opportunity. And so Peer-to-Peer Professional Forum, we actually held our last conference the last week of February.
Got it right in, under
the
wire. We
were so lucky. In fact, although the pandemic was mentioned in a couple of panels, we had no idea
of
the tsunami that was approaching us.
You were 2 weeks luckier, 2 or 3 weeks luckier than N10.
And
who had to
cancel their
conference and scramble and do what they could to move it online.
I'd like to say that I was smart. I was just in that case.
That was
very, very fortunate.
Yeah, that was lucky.
And we had 650 plus people. It was the largest conference we'd ever had. And I speak with a lot of these people frequently. And if I had a dollar for every time somebody said to me, oh my gosh, the last business trip I took was to be with you in Austin.
Yeah.
I could retire.
Yeah. Well, you have to have $650. You live meagerly in Rye, New York. If you can retire on $650, a dollar from each one, I'll give you $10 for each one. You still wouldn't be able to retire with $650.
All right. It's a metaphor.
It's an aphorism. Yes, I understand. But I take aphorisms literally unless I'm the one using them. And then why you're being silly. What are you taking me literally for? There's no winning. There's no way. Because my show, I do whatever the hell I want.
It's nice to be host and it's nice to be king. So you're the host. What do you say?
I'm the host. I'm the king. Yeah, that's good. I should use king. King Nonprofit Radio. No. All right. So much of peer-to-peer is online that there was virtually no impact on peer-to-peer fundraising throughout 2020, right? It was all already online. And
I'm sorry you've lost our game because that's absolutely not true. Oh my gosh. It was so, as I said, once upon a time, we were called the Run, Walk, Ride Fundraising Council. And in one sense, you are right, which is that of all forms of fundraising, the area that perhaps has the deepest penetration of fundraising being conducted online, maybe peer-to-peer, because people who are involved in these types of programs will reach out and use email and social media to collect all of those often smaller contributions. So there is a great penetration, but most of the activity has an analog sort of physical component in the real world. Although the balance is changing, walks, for example, mass gatherings of people,
yeah,
thousands of them every year. We started off in February going, okay, it's getting to be spring walk season. Let's get going. We're good luck this season. And within a month, basically the spring season was completely canceled. And everybody was scrambling to create some sort of virtual experience so that they would be able to continue to do that fundraising. And then within another couple of months, because we all hoped in the early days, well, all right, this is a pandemic, but how long could it last?
Yeah.
So we were optimistic that fall programs would happen because these types of programs are very weighted towards the spring and the fall. In a lot of the country, it's too hot or people are away on vacation, so they don't do them as much in the summer. Anyway, the fall went away. And so there was a mad scramble to come up with alternatives to what they'd traditionally done.
Right. And you've got some recognition for folks that did that particularly well. Just give us some perspective about what these cancellations in spring and fall meant to the community nationwide. Yeah.
So, you know, it's been interesting. We're one of our best known pieces of research is the called the Top 30 Report. We do a study in which we look at the 30 largest programs. We do one actually in the US and we do another one in Canada. And over the first few years that I was involved with this field, we were doing very nicely. The collapse, financial collapse, happened in 2008, 2009. And we've actually had negative numbers for nearly every year since then. But when you group them all together, it's usually a couple of percent maybe. And I was hoping that this coming year would be the year that we would actually finally have black ink and produce a report that said it was was positive on general. Well, nothing could be further than the truth, because nonprofits, through no fault of their own, like all of us in different aspects of our lives, you promised people X, they were used to doing X, and now all of a sudden X for 95% of the situations was impossible to do. And so they would create virtual. And anyway, we found out that, I'm using a general term, that there's about a 50% drop off in the amount of money that they raised from these programs. It really, like any average, it's an average. So you had some that were in the 70, 80% of recapturing what they had expected to raise, or at least how much they raised the previous year. You have some in the 40s. You have some that were canceled, and you have a very few, very, very, very few situations where there actually were physical programs. There are more than one, but I know of one in particular. And it's been a devastating year.
So you've got these three organizations that, I don't want to really talk about them specifically, but name them that sure. you identified as having done particularly well in adapting. And then, you know, what can we learn from these three in aggregate?
Yeah. So it's again, like everybody else, we've also had to make major changes. The way that we share information, we upped tremendously the frequency of distance learning that we were providing through our organization, because everybody was hungry for information and was locked in and they couldn't go out. And we have had a tradition in recent years of every year naming one organization as the peer-to-peer fundraising organization of the year, and sort of looking at the totality of what they do. Sometimes it's for one program, sometimes it's for a group of programs. And as we looked at last year, we decided that it would be more instructive to look at a few examples of programs, it was a program within a program or otherwise, that did well, and use them as learnable moments. So we picked out three, and each of them illustrates a different point.
It's time for a break. Turn to communications. The Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. Do you want to be in papers like that? How about CBS MarketWatch, the Chronicle of Philanthropy? Turn 2 has the relationships with outlets like these so that when they're looking for experts on charitable giving, nonprofit trends, or philanthropy, they call Turn 2. Turn 2 calls you. Turn-2.co. Now back to peer-to-peer for 2021.
In the case of, there's the ALS Association of its Greater Chicago chapter. And even though they had a spring event as part of the large ALS walk series, each chapter was sort of left to fend somewhat for themselves. And they made a fast move, which was one of the things that helped some groups and having difficulty making a decision and telling people what was coming up the pike was a big problem for a lot of groups. They said, okay, there is not going to be a large Chicago walk, but we know that a whole bunch of you have signed up, about 150 groups have signed up as teams. In this case, largely family teams, people who have somebody afflicted with that terrible disease of ALS. We want you to create neighborhood walks. And we are sending every one of you a walk in a box kit.
Oh, and great.
It's amazing. They, you know, it's a big box full of instructions and door hangers to put around their neighborhood explaining that they were going to be walking and asking people to give and all sorts of fun, uplifting type of stuff, shirts, etc. And they were able to got about 125 groups to actually walk. They had even some more grandiose plans, which were defeated by the pandemic and by some of the unrest that was happening at the exact time that they were supposed to have their program. They were going to send emissaries out to the neighborhood walks and provide them with cupcakes and have super, it's a superhero themed walk. Superhero is going to visit. They weren't allowed to send people out. But by giving people something real, by generating excitement, ooh, look at all the stuff we've got. They were able to, I think they raised about 75% of what their previous total had been.
So
ALS was so taken with their approach and some of the many smart things that they did that they encouraged and taught many of their other chapters to adopt some of their techniques, and it stood them in good stead, and they're planning to continue that for next year.
So innovation, is that what you captured you about the ALS Association?
Really, that all of these in some way, shape or form are innovation. In this case, the easiest shorthand to say is, if you can't bring the people, Muhammad to the mountain, bring the mountain to Muhammad. They created some of the excitement. People do walks, not because walks are so exciting. I mean, it's not like you're going to the, you know, if you've decided you're going to do you're a runner and you've set yourself a personal goal and you're doing a marathon, there's a whole big exciting thing. But walks are neat, but people want to be able to congregate.
Yeah, of course.
Be a part of a team. Well, that wasn't possible this year. So they helped create some of that spirit by sending it out. So that was their innovation.
Bunch of smaller communities instead of one big community of tens of thousands of people coming together. There were 125 communities that came together throughout Greater Chicago.
You're absolutely right. The second example would be Dana-Farber. And Dana-Farber does a number of amazing programs. One of their programs is the Jimmy Fund. Dana-Farber has this amazing New England charity called the Jimmy Fund. There's called the Jimmy Fund Walk. Dana-Farber is a cancer research center. And what is best known about that walk, they're based in Boston, is it follows the route of the Boston Marathon. So for years, that was sort of what they led with, the excitement that you were actually going to be able to do the route of the marathon. And all of a sudden, impossible, can't do that. And I think that their example, they were also able to have a strong performance, but it taught them a lesson about the importance of changing your messaging to never lose sight of the mission and the stories of the people and the impact that the people who are walking have. And by shifting that model of messaging to their supporters, it stood them in very good stead. And then the third group that we
Move on. So what did they do in place of the walk?
This was more of an encouragement to go out and walk on your own.
Okay.
And they also created online ways to get involved and to be a part of a group program. But this was just a really good lesson in how strategically changing your marketing message makes a huge difference. And sometimes we it's easy to get caught up in sort of the sizzle. And this was going back to the steak, which is the reason why you're doing this, yes, it's very cool to be on the marathon route, but you're doing this to help save kids and others who've got cancer.
Back to the why. The why, yeah.
The why, exactly. Okay. You sound like Simon Sinek. And then the third group that we're going to...
I like Simon, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm a big admirer too. The third one is the Terry Fox Foundation, which I imagine that most of your listeners are American. In Canada, the Terry Fox Foundation is very well known. Terry Fox was a young man, I think this was back in the 80s perhaps, who had cancer, and he lost one of his legs. It was amputated, and he decided to fight cancer, to raise money by running across Canada. Very, very dramatic. And he passed away, and they created this Terry Fox Foundation, which holds numerous walks and runs all across Canada. Once again, they went from a group that does almost 1,000 events a year to one that couldn't hold any in person. And theirs is an example. We're really honoring them for having the guts to complete what they had it planned. Terry Fox, an amazing organization, one of the largest peer-to-peer fundraisers in Canada, but also a very traditional organization. And frankly, and they have said to us, not as digitized in their approach to doing business as most or other leading nonprofits were. And they had made a decision in the previous year to make a major push in how they acted and in reaching out to their supporters via digital means and raising money digitally and doing all of that in a very new and much more modern way. And many organizations, with all of the change that was coming down the pike as the pandemic swept through the industry, would have said, oh my gosh, this is not the year to do a major overhaul of all of our systems. And instead, the Terry Fox folks said, you know what? Let's stick to the course. Let's do this. They did. It was very successful and all the more helpful to have that digital communication and fundraising in a time when you can't get together. And they recouped about, I'm forgetting the exact number, but sort of like 7 of the $8 million that they would have raised. They raised a large percentage of the money that they would have raised.
A profile in courage for doing something audacious, right, at a time when a lot of organizations might not have, but they saw the need. And they seized it.
All right. Absolutely.
So let's look forward then. So those three organizations are going to be honored, right? At the March cut, you got a March conference coming up.
Yes.
And people can find out about the conference where?
They will go to peertopeerforum.com and they will find out about this event that we're holding the afternoons Eastern time, March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, with a great deal of information on the overview of the field, as well as very specifics of if you do walks, or if you are a hospital, or if you do cycling events. There are special breakout sessions for all of those and more.
It's time for Tony's Take Two. We've calmed down. Or maybe I should say I've calmed down. Two events seem to have turned down the national temperature, or at least turned down my temperature. Maybe I'm extrapolating from myself for everybody. Maybe that's unfair, although I am the center of the universe. We know that. And Nonprofit Radio is here with me. Nonprofit Radio and I are the center of the universe. So maybe I'm not being unfair. But so maybe it's more what I'm feeling. These two events seem to have calmed me, and maybe they've calmed the nation. Donald Trump silenced on Twitter and the inauguration. I'm getting fewer news alerts. I'm not looking at my phone as much. I don't feel agitated and compelled to investigate headlines like I did before those two events. So again, like I've said three times already, maybe it's just me. So maybe this is a little therapy session. No, I don't mean Nonprofit Radio to be therapy. If it is, I'm in a lot of trouble. I'm not getting my money's worth. I feel a difference. I feel a difference in the in calmness, in increased calmness and decreased agitation, and maybe that's the national temperature as well. I'm not sure, but I'm sharing with you what I'm feeling since those two things. And that is Tony's Take Two. Now, let us return to Peer-to-Peer for 2021 with David Hesekiel. Let's look forward then, David Hesekiel. What do you think 2021 is looking like? You you had some piece in Forbes that makes some predictions from powerhouse people in peer-to-peer. Lots of alliteration there. Powerhouses in peer-to-peer, productivity and
pastrami.
And
pastrami.
Pastrami and prodigiousness.
With prodigiousness.
So what are your engagement was one thing.
Yeah. I wish, Tony, that your listeners could see a visual right now, because you can see that I've got a large crystal ball that I am looking into, peering into, because this is where I get most of my forecasts and predictions. But you'll just have to believe me.
Well, this is that Forbes piece was based on lots of other people.
Like I know. That's why.
Like Nonprofit Radio. I'm not the expert here. I'm just like a bulletin board. Like, you post things on my forehead, and then I put them out for our listeners to pick up on.
Yes, that's why I didn't put any of my predictions. But I will tell you that it was fascinating to do this. So I don't know when this airs.
But it aired the week of January 25th, I believe.
Next week.
Monday, yep.
Inauguration week. I literally just stepped away from... I work in a home office. I guess we all are sort of working in home offices now. And I just watched the inauguration.
Yes.
And it was very, very touching. And there was no messing around, no gilding the lily. There's tough times ahead. And the vaccination program seems to be absolutely key to really being able to unleash the economic power of all sorts of activity. And this area is no different, because
all the more actually. It originated as run, walk, ride. So you made very clear there is still an important in real life component to peer-to-peer fundraising.
So when we, I'll get to some of those prognostications in the past, but we did a survey some months ago asking people what were they thinking was going to be the shape of their programs next year. The overwhelming majority were saying, well, we're hoping that we will have what have become, the term has become hybrid programs.
Sure.
They would like to have physical programs, but especially for the spring. I mean, we're coming up against many programs started in March in the warmer climes, were very big in April and May. And the vaccination rollout is just not happening that fast.
Right.
So there is the feeling that there may be the opportunity to not reconstitute as, okay, we're going to have 5,000 people gathered together to do a major walk, but we may be able to say, okay, well, certain of you, this will continue to be a virtual experience, but we also have an element of this where we're perhaps organizing much smaller experience, socially distant experience. Maybe you need to reach a certain level of fundraising and then you can come to a gathering. Those combinations are called hybrids. And I think there's going to be a huge amount of that. Also, because to almost a person, when I talk to people in this field, they say the most maddening aspect of what's going on is it's so hard to plan, because we just don't know when the all clear will be sounded and we can go back to living as normal. So if you plan for a hybrid with the realization that if things get better, it can be more physical. And if things go to heck, it can be more or completely virtual. is the posture that most are taking. There's some hope. One of the people that we interviewed was Jennifer Lee, who leads the peer-to-peer effort at the National MS Society, one of the major peer-to-peer fundraisers in America. And she is guardedly optimistic that in the fall, there will be much more of a physical presence in these programs. So that is one.
All right. Yeah, you're hybrid. And I guess built into that is be flexible.
Yes. The second thing that comes loud and clear is that virtual, if your idea of virtual is just saying, well, we really can't do anything, so just give, that ain't gonna cut it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were certain, that's really just like asking for a donation, which of course all of these groups do in spades. But if it's a peer-to-peer program, it's a very difficult thing to get a lot of people enthusiastic if there's no there. So a lot of investment needs to be made in making virtual in some way inspiring, enabling groups to come together, to have that feeling of community, giving them props that bring the thing to life, such as we talked about with the ALS Association's example.
The walk in a box.
Yeah, and then we have a wonderful contributor who will be speaking at this year's conference, Nicole Dolan, who works for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And she said one of the lessons she learned along the way and that they are working on very hard is you need to give people concrete things that they need to do. Give them assignments. Sign up for this email. Come to this meeting. Post on social media. Be a part of what's going on, because your best supporters will react to that. And it's much more fulfilling for them to actually get involved than if you just sort of give them a blanket, okay, well, go off and figure it out. It that will not work. So again,
I'm having a deja vu moment right now. I've dreamed about you. Are you related? Do you have any connection to Minnesota?
No, why?
Well, I don't know. I'm asking because of my deja vu experience. There was something related to Minnesota in the dream that I had when you and I were talking.
Ah!
All right. I was hoping you could validate my dream, but all right. There was some connection with Minnesota and you in our conversation. Maybe it was just me asking.
No, I've been
non sequitur.
The fine state.
Non sequitur. All right. but I am. It's over now. It's over now. So I don't know where we're headed. I can't say. The other advantage to keeping that virtual engagement is that you can bring in those folks that joined you in 2020 who could not have joined you in a real life event. So you don't want to just kind of move them to a strict campaign, digital giving platform or channel, I should say, when their initial engagement was around an event. So if you keep the hybrid and you stay flexible and you work on engagement like you're describing, you can keep those people involved in an event fashion, even though they may be hundreds of miles away from you.
Yes. Well, I think that the higher level, more sophisticated incarnation of this type of activity has always said that you work at segmenting. You don't treat everybody as equal. We're all God's children and we treat them all well. But your top 20%, for example, of fundraisers, that's where, there's sort of an 80-20 rule. They will raise the overwhelming majority of your funds and you should be giving them a lot of attention. There's a lot of people in the walk world, especially, who come, who show up, who wear your t-shirt, who eat a banana, but actually don't raise any money. And they feel like, well, it's a community activity and we want to be involved, but we're not fundraisers. Similarly, Paul Purdy of the American Cancer Society, who was also speaking at our conference, he makes the point that he's done a huge amount of experimentation at trying different virtual approaches. And one of their lessons is really think about this as an onboarding ramp for finding people who are passionate about your cause, and then do the segmentation necessary to figure out how to keep them involved, perhaps in a virtual way, or whether they are good candidates for trying your physical event when you can hold that well, or maybe they will be supportive of your charity in a completely different way. Maybe they could become great volunteers, or maybe substantial individual givers. So this whole onboarding and shepherding, stewarding of peer-to-peer and seeing it as an on-ramp to building your funnel of supporters is very important. And virtual will never go back to being sort of the very weak excuse of saying, oh yes, we have a virtual program, but there was really no there. It was just a way of saying, well, if you live far away and you want to be supportive of other people, you can say you're a virtual walker. Now there are people, and interesting, we had a webinar the other day featuring people from Good United who also worked with the American Cancer Society and had a wonderful speaker, Dan Thorpe, from there. And what they are using a whole mixture of using Facebook, social media advertising to find people who would be interested in a particular geographic area at getting involved in a squat challenge or a individualized walk or run challenge, et cetera, and using the Facebook milieu to get them involved and to get them fundraising. They had a tremendous success with that. But they feel that most of those people will probably be kept involved by reaching out to them again through that social media connection. It's a little strong to say this, but it's almost like a bait and switch. If you try to say, okay, well, you're a social media devotee, you like to communicate this way, now we want to take you off of social media and communicate with you via email and have you go do a physical event with a lot of other people, where you've not demonstrated that you necessarily want to do
that.
Have
interest in that, yeah. You gotta meet the people where they are, not where you would like them to be and come meet you.
Yes.
Squat challenge makes my thighs tremble because I've been doing jump squats. It's only my thighs. Don't get too excited. You know, it's just thighs trembling. That stops there. Doing jump squats as part of my home workout.
I'm impressed because I try to do burpees every once in a while. Oh my gosh.
Those things. Oh, and then do split jump squats. But those things are rough. Toward the end of a set, or a bunch of reps, I'm more like, it's more like standing on your toes instead of jumping. It's like stand on your toe and squat, toes and squat. So squat challenges. I got a visceral reaction when you mentioned squat challenges.
Well, I'll try not to use any untoward vocabulary again. I don't want to scare you, Tony.
Well, I you wouldn't know my hypersensitivities. So, If that was going to be the case, we'd have to wrap up right now.
Go for more.
Lots of issues. Time for our last break. Quote, there's nothing as simple as dot drives. Our executive team meets once per week to sit down and go through our dot drives pipelines. It's fun to watch them have a healthy dialogue and to see them get excited about their numbers rising toward their goals. You can feel this person's excitement. You can feel her excitement at witnessing this. Dot Drives has allowed us to take those key relationships and bring them to a deeper level. End quote. That's Wendy Adams, Director of Donor Engagement at Patrick Henry Family Services. Dot Drives, prospect to donor simplified. Get the free demo. For listeners, there's also a free month. You go to the listener landing page at tony.ma/dot. We've got buttloads more time for peer-to-peer for 2021. You got also your thought leaders in peer-to-peer had ideas and about, not surprising. I mean, we hear this in a lot of realms. Certainly, in foundation and even corporate fundraising as well. But collaborations, be collaborative. Reach out across your community. Maybe it's across the country. Be collaborative.
Well, it's so funny that you mentioned that, because I literally had a conversation yesterday with one of the speakers for the upcoming conference. And what she was saying is that, you know, as much as there is...
It's not funny, David. This is all planned. There's nothing funny about it.
You think I've been listening in.
You think I didn't talk to the people you've spoken to in the past 2 weeks to find out about you? Wow. This doesn't just come together. I'm disappointed more than offended. Go ahead.
Looking for the silver linings, one of the things that she had been particularly happy about was that there was a lot of sharing. I mean, although many of us feel zoomed out of our minds, the fact that groups of people who knew each other but worked at different organizations were getting together, were answering one another's questions. They were going to some programming that we created and which there was a lot of sharing, has really helped folks get through this very, very difficult period. So I think that there is collaboration. And for me, it's such a delight to see, because when I started this group, there was such trepidation that if you went to a conference and you talked about how you held your event series, everybody would be taking notes about some sort of secret sauce that you might have. And they'd do that. And then all of a sudden, all of these people who had been raising money for just throwing cancer were suddenly going to become Heart Association people because they did X, Y, or Z.
Because heart still cancers ideas, and it's all zero sum. And if you gain, I must be losing.
It's so much not zero sum if you're doing it right, because people do have an affinity, unfortunately, often for your particular cause. And so this spirit of collaboration has just been growing and growing and growing.
Who can you collaborate with? If you're in this peer-to-peer world, who could you be reaching out to?
Well, I think that one thing to do, I think in any field that you're in, is to be looking at other programs, seeing if there's aspects of what they do that you admire, and being, you know, it's taking that important first step of reaching out to others to find out who they are. One of the things that's been a wonderful part of what we've been able to build is a community. You know, sometimes even figuring out who that person is isn't easy. When we're physically together, we literally leave a lot of time for networking so people can talk to one another and can share, since we are so, even within our organizations, often siloed, but we're very siloed from other folks. It's why, when we produce this upcoming event, we've created a lot of opportunities for using breakout functionality to have small group discussions, to have actually one-on-one discussions, because people are hungry for opportunities to talk one another, and we don't all need to be inventing the wheel in parallel. There's a lot of things that we can help each other out with that won't take away from us, but will hopefully make, and these people are working towards goals of trying to fight disease, fight hunger.
Of course.
It's wonderful to see some of this kumbaya spirit brought to life.
Am I naive if I suggest that when we get back to in real life, run, walk, rides, whatever form it takes, that a bunch of nonprofits in a community or in a city could get together and host something together, so that, you know, if my organization could probably only get 100 or 150 runners or walkers, whatever, but there's another organization that could get 500 and somebody else could bring 75, and together we could get 2,500 or 3,000 or 5,000 people, to, and then we could have the synergy of working together with the local police to close the streets and they get the park permits, et cetera, and rent the banners that we need and the archways and the sound system. Is that doable?
Yeah, well, actually, you raise a really interesting point, and we're seeing some of that activity already start in different ways. So, for example, in Maryland, there is the Ullman Foundation, which is a cancer foundation, actually started by the family of Doug Ullman, who used to be the head of Livestrong, is now head of Pelotonia, which is a tremendous cycling fundraiser that happens in Columbus, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Back in Maryland, when the pandemic struck, the Ullman Foundation, which has had a long history of raising money in a number of interesting ways through peer-to-peer fundraising, decided to create an event, sort of the all of the institutional work that is necessary to create the online presence and the digital fundraising systems, et cetera. And then opened this to numerous Maryland-based charities, and they could have their people plug into this program. And I don't totally quote me, but I'm remembering it right. There was virtually no cost to the charities to participate other than to defray the costs that Ullman was taking on to create this platform for everybody. They gave a certain percentage back to Ullman, and Ullman wasn't competing with them to get supporters. So that's one example. Another example, and Donor Drive was very involved in setting that all up. Donor Drive being a platform company that nonprofits use to raise funds. Another example, Event 360 is a production company primarily, very involved with peer-to-peer fundraising. Mm-hmm. And they have created something they call the 5x5K for Good. They piloted this fall in Denver. And what they did was, there are a lot of people who are avid runners, who want to get out, avid supporters of charity. And they created an event where you could run over the 24-hour period, five different 5Ks. So in toto, if you did it all, you could run basically a marathon. And they had a number of different charities. It was open to any charity. And there was it was sort of free to enter. And then there was a certain percentage that helped defray the costs. So that went on in Denver this fall. So there are a number of those efforts already underway, and it's going to be interesting to see. It's collaboration is great. It usually takes some entity to take a bold first step and sort of create something that others can get involved with.
Well, that's it. That's the nonprofit. You just profiled the Nonprofit Radio listeners. They're the bold ones. You got to be somebody's got to put a stake in the ground and say, let's rally around this.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful way of sharing costs and sharing opportunities that any one might not be able to do by itself.
Right. Are you familiar with Generosity Series?
Yes, that was the other one.
What's it called? I wasn't their host. I was their
MC.
I used to MC their events.
Wow.
I probably MC'd a half a dozen in the New York, Manhattan and Brooklyn.
A number of other people. Yes, I know them. And I have not been in touch with them recently. I have a feeling that the pandemic sort of.
I wonder, because they were strictly, I mean, they had a fundraising platform, but they were strictly real life events.
Exactly.
They were also in Philadelphia, and they were trying to go beyond the Northeast, just New York and Philadelphia.
Yeah. And they were attracting numerous charities to be able to.
We'd have a dozen or so.
Yeah.
I introduced Steve Buscemi at one because he was.
Oh, really?
He's from Brooklyn, so he was a visitor at one. We had somebody, the Brooklyn City Council, Borough President. Borough President Brooklyn, that was a different event. Yeah, I did a couple in Manhattan, a couple in Brooklyn. So I hope they're still around. Listeners, you could check out Generosity Series, because they were looking to go nationwide.
Yes.
And they're pretty ambitious guys. David and Saul. Saul was more in the background. David Lynn, right. I hope they're still doing well. But you could check out Generosity Series, certainly if you're in the New York or Philly area, because I know they've done events there. And I imagine they're smart, and they'll be coming back in 2021, 2022. So
I'm going to reach out to them myself.
That's a Generosity Series. Yeah, I will too. All right. All right. So there's cause for optimism, even though we don't, we got to stay flexible. We don't know when that, when we'll be able to amass thousands of people together. But there are lots of opportunities to go beyond that, as you described.
2020 was a very painful learning year. Again, looking for silver linings. Lots of groups learned about things that they could do with less staff, because unfortunately many groups had to lay off staff quicker than they'd ever been used to. And stretching and using technology in ways that they talked about for a long time, but now that it was a necessity, a lot of them have made some of those investments in technology that will stand them in good stead in the year to come. So I don't think that this is going to be a banner year, but I think that the learnings from 2020 will stand us in better stead to do better in 2021 and then hopefully come roaring back in 2022. Because I've been trying to figure out, Tony, you got to help me with this. There's got to be smarter, much smarter guys than I who are figuring out right now, and gals, okay, the economy is going to come back. We're going to be able to travel again, et cetera. What are the depressed stocks that I should be buying right now to make a killing when finally the floodgates open?
Yeah, you're asking the wrong guy. Well, first of all, I don't like guests to put me on the spot. That's the first thing. I'll get past that. I'm willing to overlook it this time. But
thank you. I'll never do it again.
That's why it's been so many years since you've been back. I remember distinctly you did that 6 years ago. I remember the day. I'm pretty sure it was November 4th.
It was probably in your dream, but okay.
That was Minnesota. No, that was strictly a Minnesota thing. But the other reason you're aside from that, if you looked at my portfolio, you'd see, my mantra is always buy high, sell low. So you don't want stock advice from me.
Well, I guess the two of us will be working stiffs for quite a while, because I've got a similar profile. But I do think
I need some illicit income. That's what I need. I need some of that Cayman hideable money, because I got too much of the income and not enough of the capital gain.
I think that when, as I said before, sort of like the all clear is sounded, there is going to be such a pent up demand to get together with other people.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. To celebrate and to do the good work that people are so dedicated to, that they have such an emotional connection with, hopefully maybe at the end of 2021, but certainly 2022 should really benefit from that. Excellent. And so this year, we're going to be revealing at our conference, as we do every year, what the
outcome. Enough with the shilling of the conference now. I let you get away with it for like three times. I said it once, or was it March
1st? But we're going to unveil. And
I let you go a couple times.
It's available on our site. You don't have to pay to get it. What is the results of the 2020 study that we do in terms of the top 30 programs? And that will be a very somber moment, because it's going to be terrible. The numbers are going to be awful. However, as any good salesperson who's ever had a sales commission plan knows, what you want to do is you want to join up when they've had a terrible year, because the next year that you're working off of a much smaller base. And so any gains that you have are accelerated. So I'm hoping.
There you go. So apply that lesson to your stock market question. And now you've got your answer.
There you go.
I don't know what what the answer is, but
I'll get back to you.
You have to take the next step on your own.
Maybe we'll get together with David Lynn. We'll find him and he'll tell us what.
Hey, think of it on the microcosmic level. I mean, aren't you dying to have a dinner with friends again?
Oh, I literally just answered a survey. It was sort of a fun survey talking about kind of kooky things. But one of the questions was, what are you most looking forward to when this is over? And I said, going out to dinner with friends.
Yeah. Absolutely. Hour and a half, no masks, close table for four, two,
doesn't
whatever.
Matter. The food could be awful.
Yeah, right.
Together.
Yeah. We'll have to go to one of the few remaining restaurants that that survived this thing.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much, David. David Hesekiel. He's got a bunch of shell companies, like one step ahead of the law, trying to.
Tony, did I mention that the peer-to-peer forum is on March 1st through 3rd?
Right, I'm not going to say it now. So if you want that, it's peer-to-peerforum.com. If you want to do it on the business side, you're more interested in partnering with businesses, there's Engage for Good. They also have a conference, engageforgood.com. And David is at Dave, not David. He goes by David, but I guess David at
on
David
Twitter, Cause. Dave Cause.
David Cause must have been taken by some ne'er-do-well who considers himself important in the cause-giving world. So he's at Dave Cause. David Hesekiel, thank you very much. Real pleasure.
Same here, Tony. Anytime. Let's not let 5 years go by until the next time.
Well, you slipped up again this time by putting me on the spot, which I said I don't like. So I will talk to you in 2028.
Oh, very good.
All right, David. Thank you. Next week, maybe it's Kivi LaRue Miller. If not, she'll be on soon. If you missed any part of this week's show, I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com. We're sponsored by Turn 2 Communications, PR and content for nonprofits. Your story is their mission. Turn-2.co. And by Dot Drives. Prospect to donor simplified. Tony.ma/dot for a free demo and the free month. Our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy. And this music is by Scott Stein. Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with me next week for Nonprofit Radio. You better be. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great!